What changes will Democrats look to bring to McLean County government now that they have an equal number of county board seats?
Where we've structured it so that there's no majority is that it really is, we really hope it will kind of bring people together.
The county board's first Democratic vice chair just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm John Norton. Also on today's show, a growing number of colleges are training for Illinois' new cannabis industry.
We focus on history and stigmas and myths of cannabis. That's a pretty robust topic in itself.
Plus, it's Hall of Fame Day for an Illinois State University football legend. Boomer Grigsby waited for years for the call to finally arrive.
You know, I've been on this ballot for the last few years, and it almost kind of became like a tease.
Those stories coming up after a Bloomington Normal News update. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org.
Support for WGLT comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology. BNA's educational video series, Hear My Story, continues with local patient Susan Geckner.
I think to not be afraid of it and to embrace the defect and fix it. I just wholeheartedly I'm grateful that I did.
Susan's full story can be found at bnaudiology.com.
From the campus of Illinois State University in Normal, this is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. As you heard yesterday on Sound Ideas, Democrats have equal representation in McLean County government for the first time. Democrats also have their first board member elected to a leadership post. Elizabeth Johnston of Normal is the board's new vice chair. Johnston tells WGLT's Eric Stock how Democrats brokered a power-sharing agreement with County Board Chair John McIntyre. This after Democrats won half of the 20 county board seats in the November election.
We went through a lot of different iterations of using the current county structure, kind of looking at how do we balance, like, but there are uneven number of people on committees, there are uneven number of committees in general. And so after this was better part of a week that we kind of hashed through this, I kept in touch with members on my side to kind of make sure that we were all in agreement, kind of a cohesive group on the negotiations. So when we came out with 50-50, we were very pleased. And I was really, the whole process of working with Chair McIntyre ended up being a very nice working relationship that we have there. So I really have a lot of hope for what that means for the next 2 years. That's the precedent we're trying to set and to really show the McLean County residents that we're here to support them and we're here to represent them.
What is the significance of having you as a Democrat as vice chair?
Well, the significance is that we have a 50-50 board, and so we also wanted to try to share the leadership. Obviously, Chair McIntyre has quite a bit of experience, and there's a lot of things that he does that are outside of running the meetings that I'm just very unaware of, and at this point, I hope to kind of work with him to start learning that role a little bit better.
Each of the committees set up split evenly, which, as you said, intentionally done to create balance. Do you foresee a lot of 3-3 splits in a lot of these committees that is going to lead to gridlock?
I don't think we're going to see a lot of it. I mean, obviously there are issues where they really kind of come to a head, but I do hope that this will foster them being able to talk through details a little bit more specifically, because we do want to have a functioning government. But the majority of the things that we vote on, if you go back and look, they're unanimous. You know, we're supporting the work of the staff, and we're really working for on behalf of McLean County residents. So that's really kind of what our focus is. The 3-3 split was not so much just about kind of quote-unquote power sharing, but what we really want to do is to make sure that we have equal representation. We have seen some of the shifting in McLean County, and we want to make sure that each committee has those voices to represent.
The last four elections, Democrats have gained seats. In 2016, it was 15-5 Republicans. Mm-hmm. What do you attribute that to?
I think there are a lot of factors. I think that especially with the county board, is that it was very much, I don't want to say an afterthought, but it was something that it just worked and nobody was really paying attention too much. But then, you know, in 2016, there was very much a political awakening across the country, but also here in McLean County. And as we started to get more engaged and more active, we started finding there were more and more Democrats. And so we just started making our effort to say these are the kind of policies, these are the stances that we kind of run on, that we'd like to see in shifting government. And obviously the people have responded and have been in favor of seeing some of the shift. So I think that it's the way it is that it's a much more representative of McLean County. Even when we see at kind of the state or even the federal level, is that McLean County is sort of purple. So we kind of like, depending on the race, and that's one of the things that I see in McLean County, is that, you know, that really when it comes down to the deciding, is that they're looking at who's the best candidate. And I really appreciate that and want to make sure that we are pursuing good policy, because that's what the county residents want.
So for the Democrats out there who voted you and your colleagues into office as Democrats, should they expect to see anything different out of county government?
As far as kind of coming out of county government, there are still things that obviously everybody runs on. The work of government is never done. So we'll just be shaping, we'll start to shape policy, and we'll start to kind of move towards some of the things that we ran on. And if we can convince the Republicans to join us because it's a 10-10 split, then, and it's good governance, then that's the goal.
Well, and as we've seen this at the federal level with the Senate 50-50, sure. It's not just how votes are taken, but what priorities are set, how the agenda is set, what is even brought up for a vote. Do you see that changing in any measurable way?
Well, I think that one of the things that is a little different about the structure of the county board is a couple of years ago that one of the rules that we implemented was that even if it doesn't pass in committee, a board member can request that it be pulled forward through the process, so it can move from, I don't know, say finance to exec, to again rehash and vote, and then even if it doesn't pass, it can be pulled to the county board for discussion and voting. And so that's one of the rules that actually keeps us from really like stymieing things, where we can keep bringing it forward for discussion, right? Because at 6, that's not a majority of the county board. It would be nice to have, we want to make sure that policies that are bringing forth are being considered by, as much as possible, by all the elected officials representing all of the districts.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Eric Stock with Elizabeth Johnston, new McLean County Board Vice Chair. So what particular policy areas are Democrats going to focus on in the new term on the board?
Well, we want to continue with making sure that we're supporting contracts that best benefit McLean County, particularly where we've got our place on land use and transportation, making sure that we're using local workers. With property, we are still kind of working through a plan of maintenance and making sure that we are on track so that we're not ending up spending money because of delayed work on county property. So we're really, there's a couple things that we're working on there. There's just a lot of initiatives that each of the board members, I haven't sat down with all of them to know where their priorities, but I've always been, the website is one of the things I really want to be looking at.
As far as improvements?
As far as improvements, ease of use, access, things like if you want to make a public comment, like there's no easy way to find where that link is. And if you use our little help button, it basically takes you to the code, not to the link on how to sign up. Like something simple like that to make participation from the public easier, I think is an important piece of what we can do. But there's tons of stuff, but the ease of the website is a big piece that I'd want to be sitting down to look at as well.
And as the board wrapped up its reorganization meeting, Chairman McIntyre had indicated that he had sort of made a call for civility to sort of stay off social media in sort of a partisan way. How did that land with you, and how do you feel the rest of the board is on sort of dealing with the civility issue?
Well, I think that when we're talking about working relationships and we have 2 years together, this group of people, I do agree that it's very important that we, when we disagree, that we reach out and talk to each other. I don't think there's a way for us to say that we can't, like, don't be partisan on social media. And I don't think that was really the message he was pushing. I think what he was looking for was, like, not using social media to attack each other. So you can talk about partisan, you can talk about policy, and so it can come from a very kind of partisan perspective, but I think it's the attacking and disrespect that he was looking more at. So I think that in general, that's the tone that we were trying to set with the negotiations, where this where we've structured it so that there's no majority, is that it really is, we really hope it will kind of bring people together to be like, okay, so let's talk through. It's not just black and white, here it is, let's talk about the adjustments that can be made so that we can get more on board.
That was McLean County Board Vice Chair Elizabeth Johnston with WGLT's Eric Stock. Over one-third of the county board is new. Seven members did not seek re-election. Sound Ideas is WGLT's news magazine. I'm John Norton. 2 years after legalization of cannabis in Illinois, community colleges are starting to build training programs to help staff the growing industry. There are currently 9 community colleges offering certificate or degree-bearing cannabis education programs. At Illinois Central College in East Peoria, coordinator for corporate and community education, Kristen Creek, says they've been impressed with the response to their cannabis programs. She tells WGLT correspondent Tim Alexander, ICC received social equity funding from a Peoria dispensary, Trinity Compassionate Care.
With that, they had asked us to create a course that would prepare people to work in a dispensary. And so, dispensary work is fairly new here in Illinois. And with that comes all different types of skill sets that are needed for that. And just like any other job, we developed a 5-night course. We focus on the history and stigmas and myths of cannabis. That's a pretty robust topic in itself. That's one night. We also have a night based on plant basics and the products within the industry. Another night, the third night, is focused on the laws and regulations, which are quite important to know if you're going to be working in this industry. Inventory management is night 4. And the final night, we focus on pathways into the cannabis industry and then also customer service.
There is also a series of cannabis educational workshops that you hosted. Mm-hmm. Would you like to go over what those two are and then maybe talk a little bit about what was already covered as part of these workshops?
Sure. So we have an instructor. Her name is Kelsey Bartlow. The exciting part about the cannabis educational workshops are that they're online. Anyone from around anywhere can register for these. They're free at the moment. From the very beginning, she does an overview of cannabis industry, overview of the products. She talks about the laws and regulations. Then she also, the most recent one we had was the dispensary operations at the beginning of the month. And so kind of talking about if you're interested in getting into the industry, just giving a real high level overview of that. At the end of this semester, on December 7th, will be her last class, and that is dispensary customer service. So if somebody is interested in learning more about what they can expect from people who work within the industry, what they can expect when they go into a dispensary, really the best practice of how dispensary agent or a salesperson would be talking with them about products. In addition to the cannabis educational workshops, which again will be monthly, kind of like these are right now in this semester, we also have cannabis conversations for the consumer and cannabis conversations for the healthcare professionals.
And how has the response been to the programming?
The demographics of the students, it's extremely diverse. We've got the first class, operations class that we did, the 5-night course, we had people from all over the area from different walks of life. And it was an amazing class. The response has been incredible, honestly. I just couldn't believe when we released information about the cannabis dispensary agent operations course, which is the one that prepares somebody to work within a dispensary, and they filled up within 2 days. They were full.
Has anyone yet gone to work, been through the program and gone to work? How does the job placement work?
What's exciting is that we actually did have someone from our first class. She contacted us. She actually even did a lot of hashtagging on LinkedIn, which was fun because she gave us a little bit of credit for getting a job at Revolution Global. Within this cannabis dispensary agent operations course, what kind of set us apart was including education for essential workplace skills. GPEEK is a set of badges that you can earn through trainings set up by your employer or at a college. And this was put together by the CEO Council here in Peoria. It shows that they not only learned the content within the class, but they also learned how to work well with others and how to be accountable and reliable within this industry, because that's very important when it comes to the inventory management and the laws and regulations, as well as decision making.
Do you have any information on what some of these jobs pay?
I do. So it kind of runs the gamut. So today, when I saw the jobs that were available, there were jobs that started at $15 an hour that ranged up to about $75,000 per year. It really depends on what you end up doing. The industry experts tell me that starting at the entry-level position, understanding really the very basics of the industry is the best way to go, and then move your way through the industry, because, you know, it is a new and emerging field. If this is something that people are interested in getting into, this is the time to do it.
That's Kristen Creek, Coordinator for Corporate and Community Education at Illinois Central College in East Peoria. She spoke with WGLT correspondent Tim Alexander. And it's not just community colleges jumping on board. The University of Illinois Department of Crop Sciences just announced it would offer a 4-part cannabis production and management certificate program.
Support for WGLT agriculture coverage comes from Illinois Farm Bureau and its members, committed to improving Illinois agriculture since 1916.
Thanks for listening to Sound Ideas. This is WGLT's news magazine. Boomer Grigsby says a visit to the weight room in high school changed his life. Grigsby says an assistant football coach from Illinois State University came to Canton High School, and he was there to get a look at one of Grigsby's buddies. Well, that coach took a liking to Grigsby. ISU became the only school to offer the linebacker a scholarship. Grigsby went on to break national records for career tackles at ISU and become a 3-time first-team All-American. Nearly a quarter century later, Grigsby is going into the College Football Hall of Fame today in Las Vegas. Grigsby was a candidate for induction for the last 6 years. In this interview with WGLT's Eric Stock that we first brought you in February, Grigsby says he started to wonder if the honor would ever come.
You know, I've been on this ballot for the last few years, and it almost kind of became like a tease, you know, because like each year they announce that you're back on a ballot. And it kind of was to the point after 4 or 5 years that it, like the enjoyment of that started to fade. And then I think you start to wonder, like, is this the kind of thing? Because there's so few of people that are in it. So I don't mean to complain about waiting, because it's an honor whenever it's an honor. But like, I just wasn't sure, is this the kind of thing that it's going to be 30 years from now and I'm going to be walking with a cane? And that's okay as well. But I would kind of like my parents and my family and a lot of the people that helped me along the way be a part of this.
So what does it mean to be the first Illinois State Redbird to go into the College Football Hall of Fame?
An incredible honor. You know, I mean, it's humbling. I didn't believe that it would mean as much to me as it did. I thought that it would be very cool. I thought that it would be an incredible honor. I thought it would be something that I was proud of. And then once it happened, I realized that it seemed a lot more monumental to me than I really thought that it would. I'm very proud of it. I think I'm proud of what it stands for. I feel like it's so much bigger than me. There was so many people, like, I think with age, some of this comes. I don't really like the word maturity because I'm still relatively wild. But at the same point, like, I think when you reflect back, there's so many people that made a difference in your career. And some of them played the smallest of part. But like, it wouldn't be fair to say that part was too small, because that part may have led to a larger part. So there's so many people along the way that helped me, or that did something for me, or just an act of kindness or something, that I feel like, you know, it's bigger than me. Like, the university was great to me. The town of Bloomington Normal was great to me. The fans, and so many, like, support people and staff.
You played parts of about 5 seasons in the NFL, Kansas City, Miami, Houston, and that's longer than a typical NFL career. And you had to play some bruising positions, including fullback, linebacker. What will you remember most about your time in the NFL?
It's like most things in sports that not everyone really realizes. It wasn't like one play or so that always comes to mind. It was the relationships that I built, like the teammates, the locker room, the camaraderie. For me personally, you know, going to Kansas City was such a roller coaster, because I had an aunt and uncle who lived there. And because it was like 5.5 to 6 hours from Central Illinois, I felt like I got to enjoy this wonderful roller coaster ride in life. But like a lot of people got to kind of follow me on it because it was logistically easier. You know, my family could come down for every home game. And so it was just like this blessing that so many more people got to experience just due to being fortunate enough to be drafted to Kansas City instead of, you know, a team that was on either coast.
And some casual football fans may best know you from Hard Knocks, the HBO documentary. There was one publication that said you were one of the most colorful characters on that show. Did you ever think about pursuing a career in sports television other than some television analyst work that you've done?
I mean, it crossed my mind from time to time. I just wasn't really sure how to explore that. I've kind of always been in the identity crisis, searching for what I was really looking for. You know, what I get most and what I always wonder is I probably should have just left football and went into like, tried to be like professional wrestling or something. I don't know what my character would have been, but like, I think I could have pulled that one off.
It's not too late, right?
It's not too late, but you know, at 40 and now I have a relatively good security with a great career and family, it just might not be the right time to go on the road, but, and the body has held up pretty well, but you know, I think I'm going to have to do some research, think about what kind of character I would be. And I think that it's, as much as that sounds kind of like a fun theatrical job, I believe it is exponentially more difficult than people assume. So you kind of need to be all in or not in at all.
The game of football is not seeing the same level of participation at the high school level in Illinois as it did even when you were playing back in Canton a decade or so ago. What do you make of that?
There's a lot more information in the world. So I think that people have kind of the ability to make their own decisions. And I think with, I'm assuming that some of that has to do with things related to head trauma. And it seems like the game has made some changes in a positive light in order to help protect the players. I think it's still like an ongoing learning experience. You know, other sports are becoming more popular, maybe just because they're available. I don't think that the sport of football is dying. I just think that it's had to evolve and make some changes. You know, I mean, when I watch the game now and there's any heavy collision of any sort, like I feel like I automatically see a yellow flag, which part of me is like, seems a little unnecessary. We used to celebrate those moments. But at the same time, I respect that the changes that are being made, that for the most part, they're to protect the game.
That was former ISU football player and College Football Hall of Fame inductee Boomer Grigsby with WGLT's Eric Stock. Grigsby sells medical supplies in the Las Vegas area. And that is Sound Ideas Today, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm John Norton. Story help came from Eric Stock a couple of times and from correspondent Tim Alexander. The show was produced by Samantha Hill. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org, Bloomington Normal's public media.